Well, I left it somewhere, so I got my big study Bible here. So, but while you're flipping there, I assume that most of you by this stage of your life have seen at least one of the Toy Story movies. I got a bunch of little kids, and it's some of their favorite movies, but it all started in 1995 with the original Toy Story. And if you've noticed, when you watch that movie, the kind of the major plot line, at least at the beginning of the movie, is about a toy that is dealing with envy. The focus of the movie is a toy by the name of Andy, the cowboy. Woody, Andy's favorite cowboy. I have seen the movie. And Woody is literally Andy's favorite. So every time they play together, Woody is always the hero. Until his birthday comes and he gets a new toy, a shiny toy named Buzz Lightyear. And Buzz is everything Woody isn't. He's got lasers and wings and thinks he can fly, and he doesn't even know he's a toy. And so pretty much the beginning of the movie is about Woody trying to process the fact that he is so envious of Buzz taking his place. So the truth is that plot line connects with my heart, and it connects with your heart when you watch that movie, because you and I struggle with envy. This is a real battle for many of us. And the word envy is very much a biblical word, so maybe you don't use that verbiage, but the Bible says that this is something that impacts all of us. And so what we want to do in our time together is we want to begin to work through Psalm 72, looking at different sections of it, and to see how God is going to help us with envy. And the sermon is pretty much divided up into two sections. The first section is to say, what is envy and how does it impact our lives? And the last section is to focus in on how God can help us with it. All right, so starting off in verse 2, I'm just going to read 2 and 3, and then we're going to kind of highlight portions of it as we work our way through. So verse 2 says this: "But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped, for I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." All right, so number one, we got to answer the question, what is envy? What does it mean to be envious? And the psalmist opens up by saying the thing that he is envious of is wicked people. He doesn't understand why the life of people who dishonor God is easy. And he's trying to honor God and his life is hard. The writer of this psalm is Asaph. He's written multiple psalms. He was a worship leader in Israel. And it doesn't make sense to him. So, for example, if you're looking at that chapter, if you get on to verse 4, all the way down through verse 12, he begins just to highlight all the ways that they get to prosper, and he doesn't. So in verse 4, it says that when they die peacefully. In verses 4 and 5, it says that they're blessed physically. Literally, what the text says is they're beautiful people. They're all really thin, they're all really fit, they're all really attractive, and I don't know what Asaph looked like, but it must not have been that because he was jealous of it. He was envious of it. In verses 6 and 9 and 11, the text says that these people are flourishing and they're arrogant about it. Everything that they do is successful. The battles they fight win and the money they try to make is increased greatly, and the crops that they grow always flourishes. And then they think it's because of them and how awesome that they are. Verse 12 says that these people get to avoid pain. And then it goes on later on in verse 12 to say that these people get to enjoy prosperity. And Asaph is looking at all of this. And he says, I want what they have. He's saying this isn't fair. This isn't right. So a good definition of envy is this: envy is a hostile attitude that resents, that's the key word, it resents another person's success, advantages, or qualities. And sometimes those things are real, sometimes they're made up in our mind, but we desire that for ourselves. Timothy Keller, in a sermon I listened to from him, a couple sermons from him, he has like my favorite definition of envy that I think captures the way that we feel with it sometimes. Here's what he says. He says, envy is wanting someone else's life, or wanting some sort of aspect of their life. And he goes on to say this: envy is that thing in your heart that makes you unhappy with other people's happiness. And he says the opposite of that is true. When you're envious of somebody and something bad happens to them, it actually makes you happy. So when they're unhappy, you're happy. And when they're happy, you're unhappy. And what he says is all of that is just rooted in our own bitterness and envy. So let's look at the ways that this impacts us from the text. Number one, envy always leads to bitterness and anger that is difficult to control. If you go down to verse 21, you can see it there in this chapter. Now he's already, before verse 21, he's come to the solution of how God's going to help him. But he's sort of reflecting back on when he was really struggling with envy. And here's what he says. He says, when my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant, I was like a beast towards you. So what he's saying is when he was struggling with envy, those feelings were driving him not to be spiritually discerning or to think with his mind and his heart. But his irrational response was he thought like an animal, like a beast. No understanding. It didn't matter. See, the truth is envy can make you and I feel like someone else is living the life that we deserve. And the fact that they are living the life that we believe we deserve is this insane injustice in our minds and our hearts. And we don't just embrace that reality, but we're filled with rage. We're filled with anger. See, envy ultimately robs us of joy and happiness. Instead of helping us to be content in God's goodness and God's kindness to us, it twists our hearts to believe a lie, which says, what God's given me isn't enough. God's made a mistake. I deserve something better or more. And it drowns out gratitude and it feeds a hunger for something else that belongs to another person. So let me give you an example of this that I think many of us can at least understand or we've experienced a point. Maybe at a job that you were right now, or maybe in the past, somebody got a promotion that you felt like you deserved. And now that person gets more money than you get, and they have more authority than you have, and maybe that authority is even over you. And if you have envy in your heart, you're not excited for them and the success that they've had. You're jealous of it. It makes you mad. And in the words here, you're embittered. You have bitterness in your heart because of that. There's frustration, and that frustration is rooted in envy. And if you want a biblical example of how envy leads us to a place that we can't control our anger, you just have to look in Genesis 4. There's this narrative about these two brothers, Cain and Abel. We studied it a while back here in church. If you're not familiar with the story, it's a really, really great narrative. You have two brothers, Cain and Abel. They both bring an offering to God. God looks at Abel's offering and says, this is a good thing. I accept it. Thank you. As an expression of worship. Then God looks at Cain's offering and he says, I don't accept it. We don't really know exactly why God embraced one and not the other, but it seemed to have to do with the heart of the giver. And so as a result, Cain isn't excited that his brother did the right thing and he's right with God. He becomes jealous of his brother. He becomes envious of his brother. And that envy isn't just this isolated emotion. It leads to anger, that leads to hatred, ultimately to the point that he murders his own brother. And that murdering of his brother started with an internal thought. That's not fair, God, that you embrace his gift and not my own. So the first point in this section is envy has massive consequences if we don't deal with it in a way that honors the Lord. Here's the second thing that envy does, and I borrowed this from a pastor that I listened to. Envy always reveals what you and I love the most. It reveals the idols of our heart. It uncovers what we want and what we desire more than God. So a good biblical example of that is from 1 Samuel 18. You have King Saul and you have David. David's just killed Goliath. And he's risen to fame really quick. Saul is the king of Israel. He's the one that God appointed there. But the problem is, everything that David is doing under the authority of King Saul, he's incredibly successful. If he goes to a battle, if he goes to a war, whatever he does, he's good at it. You guys know people like that? They're just kind of annoying. Like, you think you're better than them at one thing, and then you play them in that thing, and they beat you in it. You know, like, I could beat them in ping pong, and then they whoop you in ping pong. You know, it's like, they're better looking than you, they're more gifted than you. Oh, yeah, he was a musician, too. It's like, he's like the full package. And instead of Saul believing, I've appointed this guy here, he makes my kingdom better, he makes my monarchy better, he glorifies God. Saul doesn't do any of that. He's filled with jealousy and envy of David. And it kind of comes to a head in chapter 18 when after a battle, the women of the whole nation of Israel are singing, Saul, you've killed your thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands. That's basically saying he's better than you, Saul. And what Saul does is he hates him after that. In verse 9 of chapter 18 in 1 Samuel actually says that Saul eyed David, meaning he sought a way to kill him and destroy him. And he even tries to do it, and David has to run for his life. We're actually going to study a psalm next week talking about pain and suffering of when Saul did that to David. Now, here's the point. Saul's envy reveals a battle inside of his heart. David was being affirmed. David was being celebrated. David was loved by the people. And when that was happening for David and not for Saul, he was jealous of it, which reveals something inside of his heart, that Saul has an idol. The idol in Saul's heart is he wants to be praised and loved by people over God. He would rather people recognize him and praise him and have the spotlight on him than he would be obeying God. That Saul's identity was wrapped up in being admired by others. So when David is getting that, when he wants it, he's jealous, he's envious. So instead of Saul living a life seeking God's favor, he's chasing after this idol that has actually been given to David. So the point, I think, is clear that when you and I are envious, there's something in our heart that we want that maybe God doesn't want us to have. There's something in our heart that is an idol, and we have to identify it. So here's an example that I think a lot of us struggle with. Maybe you've experienced this when it comes to some kind of material possession. You pull into a parking lot, you see somebody else's vehicle, rather it's a truck or if you're a family person like me, a van or some kind of car, and you see their vehicle and how much nicer it is than yours, and you're not happy for them. You're envious. It's got less miles. It's got features like Apple CarPlay that you know yours is never going to have. You could have the cord all that you want. It's not Apple CarPlay. Yours has way more miles, and it makes a weird noise whenever you crank it up till it gets warmed up. You know what I'm saying? And when you see that, deep down, you're envious of it. And the point that we're trying to make in this text is, what if God is trying to elevate the idol in your heart? Because here's the idol. If we're jealous of some kind of material possession that somebody has, the idol is we believe stuff will make us happy. A newer car, a nicer house, and a nice boat, or better clothes. We believe that if I could just have this thing, then I could actually have joy. And the Bible doesn't teach that joy is found in things. The Bible teaches that joy is found in God Himself. And so that envy that we feel when we see somebody's car or their house or, I don't know, anything else that they have that we believe we should have, God is trying to show us that there's an idol in our heart that needs to be torn down so that Christ will reside on his throne. Here's the third thing that envy does. It will lead to covetousness. Now, when I was prepping, I don't know what is wrong with me, but I cannot say that word, covetousness, okay? I don't know why. It just does something in my brain, doesn't get to my tongue to get me to say it right, so my bad. But they are very similar, envy and coveting. But there's a little bit of a difference. So envy, remember, is when you have resentment in your heart because somebody has something in their life or their whole life that you want. Coveting is more specific. It's when that resentment moves to this strong longing and desire for a specific thing that belongs to somebody else. So envy would be like if little Johnny is resentful that when he goes to his friend's house, his friend has more toys than him. That's envy. Coveting would be that when little Johnny goes to his friend's house, he thinks, I wish I had those Star Wars Legos. It's not fair they get those Legos and I don't. And maybe even little Johnny starts thinking of a plan to steal those Legos, or what little kids do is they find a way to make a trade that's unfair so that they can get those Legos. There's many times we have to undo trades in our house. It's like, no, we don't share those toys. Because there's always a hustler somewhere in somebody's house. And so that's what coveting is. And envy will always lead us to that place. And we know coveting is wrong. It's one of the Ten Commandments. You can see it in Exodus 20. God says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything else that is your neighbor's. So if envy is not dealt with, it's going to lead to coveting, and then coveting leads to other really horrific mistakes and sins. And one of the things I thought about when I was studying this and reading things from lots of different people is one of the ways that we covet and we have envy is when we compare our appearance, our physical appearance, to somebody else's appearance. I never thought about it like that, but I started seeing that and I was like, yep, I do that. I'm sure other people do. You walk into a room or you scroll Instagram and immediately your eyes are drawn to someone who you think in your own eyes looks better than you. Maybe it's their skin, their hair, their build, their smile, or whatever it is. But deep down inside of us, we're envious of that. We don't admire them and their beauty. We resent them. And we start to believe a lie. That if I did look like them, I would actually be happy. See, that's envy whispering in our ear that God's made a mistake. And if this is your struggle, and I've done this before, you may think if my metabolism was a little bit better, my body type was different, if I had different eyes, if I had their abs. You guys have heard me jokingly say I've got a deviated septum. I found these things on YouTube that you put this like sticker on your nose and it opens up your deviated septum. Have you guys seen this before? I was walking around the house like 3 days ago and my wife and kids were like, what is on your nose? And I'm like, I'm trying to fix my crooked nose. But the truth is that when you begin to look at other people who may have those characteristics and traits that you feel like that you have, you're filled with resentment. You question why God's made you the way that you are. And we stop believing that God's designed us with love in his heart towards us. So what does all of this mean? Well, here's the first thing, okay? Here's the problem with envy. In our hearts, when we are envious, here's what we say we believe. Here's what we're saying. We're saying, God, I don't trust you. We look at our life and we think, if my home just had the extra bathroom, if my spouse was a little different, if my kids were a little bit better behaved, then under those circumstances, I'll be satisfied. But don't you see what envy is doing? It's saying, God, here's the deal, God. Why don't you run things the way that I think you should run them? And God, if you would do it that way, then guess what? My life would be better, and I'd stop being so aggravated with you. Do you see how ridiculous that sounds? I read one thing from Timothy Keller. Here's what he said. This is so profound. I hope that you can like hear it, because I wrestled with this week. Here's what he said. He said, when your heart is at that place of just envy and jealousy and discontentment, here's what he goes. He said, you could take a person that has that kind of envy in their heart and you could put them in the Garden of Eden. And if you're not familiar with the implications of the Garden of Eden, but it's paradise on earth. Anything that you want, anything that you desire is in the Garden of Eden. And what Keller says is when somebody's heart is at that place of envy, you could put them in that garden and they would go, this isn't enough, God. I need something better than this. Paradise isn't enough. I need something more. And that's exactly what Adam and Eve did. So I know this is overly simplistic, but I do think that the first step when it comes to envy is to call it what it is, which is sin. It's not that life isn't fair. It's wrong to be envious of things that God has not entrusted to us. And the way to grow in our sin is to identify it and agree with God. That when I have resentment in my heart because somebody else has something that I think I deserve, it's envy and it's sinful and I need to bring it to the Lord. And just take another step of hopefully being super, super practical. If this is a real struggle for some of you in this room, it may be smart for a season to take a break from social media. Maybe a month or 2 months or maybe even more. Because every single time you open Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook or whatever tool you use, you're bombarded with other people's highlight reels. Their kids are winning these awards, and your kids don't get those awards. They went on this vacation that you're never going to get to go on. They have this anniversary post about their marriage, and you know their spouse seems a lot better than your spouse. You see the pictures that they take in the gym and the gains that they've made, and you're like eating a Debbie cake. You know, it's like, and you see all of those things, and it doesn't make you happy. It fuels your resentment and your envy. So maybe for you, it'd be wise, the same way that if somebody struggles with lust and they're bombarded with things on social media, that they put a boundary up with that. And please don't misunderstand me. I'm not anti-technology or social media. I have social media accounts, so I'm not saying you need to not be on it. I am suggesting to you that if you struggle with self-control and the envy in your heart, I can tell you that that does not help you. And it may be wise for a season to just step away. To just move away from it, take it off your phone, lock your phone down, so that you could begin to grow in this. So that every time you get on there, you're not spiraling in a heart of envy. So what do we do with envy? Number one, we call it sin. And here's the second thing that the text shows us. We bring it to Christ. Go down to verse 16. I want you to see this. This is sort of the pinnacle of the chapter of what we do with an envious heart. Verse 16 says this. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went in the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. So there's two things that God says we should do with it. Number one, when we struggle with envy, we need to bring that struggle to God. I don't know why we do this, and maybe you don't. You're on varsity, but most of us, when we struggle, it's like our preference is to struggle in secrecy. We would rather struggle in a way that nobody knows that we struggle, because if people know that I struggle, I'm going to look weak. I should know how to not be battling with this. And it's sort of an appearance thing, or maybe a pride thing, or an arrogance thing. But if you look at that chapter, look at it, if you're holding your Bible, the first 15 verses, you know what Asaph is doing? He's complaining. He's saying, God, this isn't fair. That thing's not fair. That thing's not fair. That's not fair. That's not fair. That's not fair. For 15 verses, he is bringing his grievances to God. And here's the thing that he's struggling with. He's saying, God, you told us if we honor you, you would honor us. And then I'm looking around me, and the world is filled with people who don't honor you. They live a life of complete and utter rebellion against you. So why do they get to live what appears healthy and prosperous lives? And my life is struggling. And he's bringing it to God, and he's saying, God, it doesn't make sense to me. And my favorite word in the whole chapter is he says, this whole thing to me is wearisome. Like, as I'm trying to figure this out, I just feel tired. I feel weary. I can't connect the dots. I'm frustrated, God. But the key is he brings those to the Lord. So here's the thing. When you and I are tempted to run from God, if we're Christians, we should run towards him. That we need to learn from Asaph's example. Our God loves us so much. He even loves us when we're frustrated. And he wants to hear where we're struggling. Here's the second big thing in the text. This is going to blow your mind here, ready? That only God can help us with our envy. You may want to write that down. It's profound. And the way that the text says it is, he says, I don't understand this. It's a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. The sanctuary of God represents God's presence. So to be in the sanctuary is to be with God and to see things not from an earthly perspective, but from a heavenly perspective. And so the way that the psalmist, what Asaph does to fight his envy, is he goes into God's presence and he says, I need your help. I'm never going to figure this out on my own. Would you help me be content? Would you help me be satisfied? Now before we kind of unpack what that actually means, God answers his prayer. God basically says, it looks like they're prospering in this life, those wicked people, But one day they're going to stand before me. And if they haven't bowed their knee to me, if they haven't followed me and obeyed my commandments, then what's going to happen to them in the judgment is going to be horrific for them. So, and Asaph says, okay, that makes sense. That helps me. But the bigger idea that I think applies to you and applies to me is this. As long as Asaph is focused on the wicked people and what feels unfair and the prosperity that they have, what he feels is despair. But when he takes his focus off of them and he puts it on the presence of God and the character of God, his entire vision of life is transformed. So it's as if Asaph is saying, I don't need what they have. I just need you, Lord. If I could have more of you, that would be enough for me. And it's in God's presence that his envy just melts away and he realizes that God is better for his life than money or success or good crops or health and wealth. And he says, I just need you, Lord. And to go down to verse 25. I wish I would have highlighted this so it would be on the screen, but it's too late now. So if you have a Bible, look at 73, verse 25. Here's what he says towards the end of this section of the chapter. He says, whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth, now watch what he says, that I desire besides you. Do you see the profoundness of that statement? So here's what that means. That means we should want God more than anything that we would be envious of. Whatever that thing is in that blank that you could put there. If it's the way that you look, or the way that you appear, more money, a better job, a promotion at your job, a nicer house, whatever. Better kids, a different spouse. Whatever is in that blank, what the psalmist is saying is that will not fulfill your soul. And the only way that you will have true satisfaction in the world in which we live is if you know Jesus and you live for Jesus and you find satisfaction in Christ. So James, you guys can come back up. We're going to close out singing a song here in a minute. But I just want you to wrestle with something. The Bible teaches that Jesus has come to give us freedom from our envy. And Asaph gets that. The answer to your envy is, and because here's what we do. Let's be real. We're just being honest. We're having a conversation, right? What we do when we're envious is we make sacrifices to try to get that thing that we're envious of. And as a result, the trajectory of our life isn't moving towards Christ and his glory, but it's moving towards something that's of this world. And when Jesus died on the cross, he died to save us from this world, to put us on the pathway to live for him. And that even though we are envious and even though we pursue these things, that Christ has died for us anyways, so I want you all to see a verse. This blew my mind this week when I studied it. It was envy in the Gospels, in the hearts of the religious leaders, that ultimately drove them to put Jesus on the cross. And so in Mark chapter 15, verse 10, I'm going to read it here in a second, but Jesus is on trial with a Roman leader by the name of Pontius Pilate. He's been turned over by religious leaders because they hate Jesus. And Pilate knows Jesus is innocent. He knows it in his heart. He's a pagan. He has no clue and he doesn't care who Yahweh is. And what you read here is he's trying to find a way to get Jesus off without actually standing up to the people. Pilate's a coward. He's sort of like Saul. He wants the people to like him. And the truth is, if that's your heart, sometimes it's hard to be a leader because you've got to make decisions as a leader that offend people and upset people. And so Pilate actually says, I've got a guy over here. He's a horrible, wicked, evil, rebellious, causing insert, like a horrible guy by the name of Barabbas. You guys probably want him to crucify. And the people say, no, no, no. We don't want him. We want Jesus. Crucify Jesus. And when Pilate sees that, here's what Pilate says. For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priest had delivered him up. So what you find in that passage is the religious leaders saw Jesus in all of his glory and they were jealous of him. They were envious of him. Jesus was wiser than them, when he taught, the text says that he taught with authority different than them because he was God in the flesh. The people loved Jesus. He had to literally escape the crowds multiple times because so many people wanted to be close to them. He had everything that they wanted, respect and influence and power. Jesus wasn't just another teacher. He was the second person in the Trinity. And this is the beauty of the gospel. That envy drives him to the cross. Now, here's what blows my mind. Envy is driving him to the cross so that he could die on the cross for envy. And the very people that are nailing him there, he's crying out on the cross, "Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing." That is an extension of grace. That's an extension of mercy. And here is the point. The only hope that we have to fight our envy is to see the forgiveness that we have in Jesus. That is better than anything that this world can offer us. So I think there's a dual meaning to that, okay? Number one, you cannot do anything with envy if you are not a Christian. You can put Band-Aids on it, you can find life skills on YouTube, but at the end of the day, it's going to rule your heart. The only way to find forgiveness of envy is to place that envy on Jesus and understand that he died for it. And so if that's you and you're not a Christian, then today you need to trust Christ. That until you have, in the words that James quoted when he prayed earlier, tasted of the Lord and seen that he's good, then you're always going to believe suffering in this world is better than him, and it's not. Once you have encountered Jesus, and you have understood that he's better than anything in creation, then you want him more than anything else. And if you don't know Jesus, you don't know what that's like, and so you need to trust Christ. And the second thing is, maybe you're a Christian and you know this, but you've just allowed yourself to wander from the truth for a while. You've allowed yourself to be deceived by Satan. And you have forgotten the fact that Jesus is better in every way. And today, in light of this text, you need to be reminded that whatever it is that you want, that you think will make you happy or fulfilled or satisfied, never needs to replace the beauty and the majesty of the one who died for you and rose from the grave. So my encouragement to you, Christian, is if you know Christ, is be reminded of the beauty that you have in him. Because envy drove him to the cross so that you and I can be with God forever and walk with him in this life. So if you're not a Christian, you need to trust Christ for the first time and surrender your life to him. And if you are a Christian, you need to trust Christ. Follow him in the way that you did when you originally trusted him. So if you bow your heads and close your eyes, we're going to close out singing a song. But if you are here and you're not a follower of Jesus, Eddie's going to be up front. I'm